So if you're just joining us, the streamers just kicked in on YouTube and all the video stuff that's sometimes delayed. Former guest of this show, Christopher Gervais, aka Gervaisi, of Wildlife Conservation Film Festivals, passed away last Friday. I spoke to his mother at length, and I am going to be replaying his program that he was on. Again, it's from 2021, so I don't think any of the links are there, but he was talking about his life work, basically, what Wildlife Conservation Film Festival, an organization that he built along with some business partners, and its mission. So I'm going to replay that interview. I want to say rest in peace, Chris. It's been great knowing you. It was great knowing you for 35 years. It came as a shock. We knew that he was sick. He had started some new treatment, new medications, things of that nature that did not work out, obviously. So rest in peace, Chris. We're going to share with you right now that program. And I'm going to step away here.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
They watched the film of killing of whale sharks off their waters. And as a result, that film helped change policy.
Good morning, everybody, and happy Thanksgiving for you people in the United States. We have a special program today. Today, I interview Chris Gervais of Wildlife Conservation Film Festivals. He has a online film festival on wildlife conservation at ZERB.TV, XERB.TV. And without any further delay, here is my interview with Chris Gervais. Good afternoon, good evening, whatever time of day it is for you. This is Jim Polzel with Safety Wars. Today we're going to have a little bit of a different program. We're always concerned about industrial safety, safety for our homes, safety for our communities. Today we're going to be talking about safety in the environment, specifically endangered species and other wildlife. And I have on the other end of this, Christopher Gervais, who, you know, I'll disclose here, he's been my friend for about 30 years now. Is that right, Chris? Roughly?
Yeah, that's about it, Jim. I guess since we were in kindergarten, right?
Yeah. We actually both attended, then it was Stockton State College in the Environmental Studies Department. I was more of the geology type and natural resources type. Chris was more of the, I believe it would be fair, marine biology, paleontology end of things.
Yeah, I mean, at the time at Stockton, I was environmental science and studied vertebrate paleontology under Dr. Wood, and then graduate school. Went on to marine science, but that's a fair enough assessment of my background.
Right, and about 11 years ago, or has it been 10 years, lost track of time, you started Wildlife Conservation Film Festival. I think everybody here knows my background. There's always a debate in college, in graduate school specifically, with you have a protected species, a protected ecosystem, and how do you feel good about that? But the argument was, well, you got to do more than feel good about it. You have to experience it. And a lot of the ecosystems out there, most people will never get to, whether they're in Africa, South America, the Southern Sea, or the Southern Ocean, as I was corrected by my son a couple of weeks ago. All these places most people will never go to. So, but we have a thing called films and the internet and things of that nature. And Chris's mission, I'll let him go into it. It's more or less to bring all of that to you through conservation film festivals. And we'll turn it over to you, Chris. So,
No, thank you, Jim. So WCFF, as we abbreviate ourselves, Wildlife Conservation Film Festival, the name says it all. We're now in our 12th year, approaching our 12th year. And our mission is very simple, very straightforward. We inform, we engage, we inspire wildlife conservation through the power of film. And very much of what you just said is true. Not everyone can see a wombat or a whale in the wild. So we bring these ecosystems, these species, to the people. And we do it via several platforms. We have our flagship film festival in New York every October, which runs 10 days where people can come and attend which you did yourself this year. And there's over 100 films that are screened during that time. In a normal year, a non-pandemic year, we have hundreds of filmmakers there from all across the globe where people can speak with, ask questions, and interact with. But last year, meaning 2020, because of the pandemic, as we call it, we were forced not to be able to have the event with a live audience as theaters were shut down in the city. So we were forced to do a virtual program, which, well, because we had people from all across the globe, whether it be from Argentina to Algeria, from Bangkok to Beijing, that came and logged on because they were never able to come to New York for whatever reasons. And for 40 days, we screened, I think last year was 200 and some films. We had hundreds of filmmakers and scientists where we did multiple live chats daily via Zoom, where people again could interact. And because of its popularity last year, we're doing the same thing again this year. So starting on November 25th, and I realize that's Thanksgiving for us Americans, but not for the remaining 200 and some countries across the globe, we will launch again our virtual edition of this year's film festival, which will have 120 plus films and some days live chats with filmmakers. And for anyone who is interested in this, it's a very simple process. You can log on to xerb.tv, ZERB.TV, and from there, you'll go to Wildlife Conservation Film Festival, WCFF, and then you'll go to our virtual events.
So and, if you're following along, this will be in the summary. The website will be in the summary, as well as Chris's contact information.
And you know, once you log on, it's a $20 fee for 35 plus days, where you can watch over 115 films. I think it might be closer to 120 now. And these films range anywhere from 5 minutes to 2.5 hours. And you can watch them as many times as you wish over that time period. You can watch them from your iPhone, your Android, your iPad, your Apple TV, your smart TV, numerous different platforms. And you can watch each film multiple times. You can even put a film, some of the longer films that are over 60 minutes. You can put them on pause. You don't have to watch it all at once. And then you can come back a day or a few days later, even a week, and resume where you left off. Yeah, it's a great way to spend the holidays. Not everyone is traveling. Some people are by themselves.
I know we did it last year with our children, my wife and I, and it was a fantastic experience to actually see that. And they were 8 and 5 at the time. A five-year-old pretty found it, a lot of the stuff very cute. And it, what was nice was with the shorter films, that was something really appropriate for the under 10-year-old.
It matches their attention span.
Yeah.
The great thing about these films is you won't find them on Amazon. You won't find them on Netflix. At least not yet. Some of them will never make it for a number of reasons. And these films in particular, they are world premieres at the 2021 WCFF, both in our theater or on our virtual platform. So, you know, for those that have, say, they're apprehensive and say, oh, no, not another online platform to watch films. Well, yes, there are certainly dozens out there. The films that WCFF is showing here and now, you will not see on the other platforms at this time. And again, it's only a one-time subscription fee of $20 for the virtual event. And then if you want to continue watching these films, after the virtual event is over, then we have the WCFF channel,
right,
which currently has, I think, about 525 films, some of which are part of this virtual event, others which date back to within the last year and a half of when we created the channel. And that is a very nominal fee of $6 a month. And again, the vast majority of those films there you also will not find on the major platforms that I had just mentioned. So, you know, again, I believe this information will all be provided at the end of the program. Right, but go to xerb.tv/WCFF, and then you'll see virtual event for the virtual program. Or if you want to subscribe to the channel, that will be under Watch Anytime. That's how you can follow us. And if you want to get more information, you know, we're very active on social media. WCFF is on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And our website, again, is wcff.org.
Great, Chris. We'll touch base on that in a little bit. You went through an evolution, I guess. You're always interested in all this stuff going way back, right, on this end of the environmental field. So this is sort of like an evolution, like what I think most people, I'll say, are vintage, right, where you go through an evolution and you end up in places that you don't really expect. So would it be fair to say that you went through a similar evolution? No, you're always interested in this subject matter, protecting endangered species, protecting ecosystems, and it's been like a passion of yours. it's been like a running theme. So, for example, you were involved in several nonprofits. We won't have to mention them, but and everything else. That seems like a really good fit for you. I've known you for all these years.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point you bring up. I mean, I had always been involved in nature and in science ever since I was a wee lad. I guess that's following the family's genes, family history. You know, after college, after graduate school, I went into academic research and teaching, and I thought I would be there the rest of my life. I was living in South Florida and was very happy there, but I moved back to the Northeast to get married, which unfortunately that didn't work out. And then I worked in academic publishing for a number of years. And you know, that bubble, as we all know, burst around 2010. I found myself at a convention in San Francisco where my entire division was laid off via an email. Although it wasn't any surprise because the writing was on the wall for some months. So what I did was got a car and drove home across country because I didn't have to be back at the office, so to speak, on Monday. And you know, I had one of these find yourself or redefine yourself moments, and stopped in multiple national parks on the way home, and stopped in a small town in Montana where they were having a film festival, similar to what I do now.
Was that a limited Montana?
This was in Missoula. I said, you know, it's a shame there's nothing like this in a major metropolitan city in the country. And at that time, there was not. A lot of these environmental film festivals, which we are not an environmental film festival, we are more defined. Specifically our genre is a wildlife conservation film festival, are generally much smaller, less populated towns. And here we come along and we decide, I guess this is May of 2010, that, you know, at the time I was a member of an organization in New York City, and I had met with several mentors, Dr. Sylvia Earle and the late Jim Fowler, and they said, you know, go for it. You're not doing anything at the moment. You're in between careers. Why don't you try and do this on your own? And WCFF was then launched at that time. And our first event was in September of that year, September of 2010. The first 2 years we had our film festival out in the East End of the Hamptons in Sag Harbor. And you know, a smaller event, but over the years it's grown from one day to where now in our 12th year. And for the last few years, it's been a 10-day event with hundreds of films, hundreds of filmmakers, thousands of attendees. Although this year was an exception, you know, our attendance was light. We didn't have international filmmakers this year.
You've had major celebrities show up to these events.
We have over the years. We've had a number of them. I won't mention their names because a lot of them, you know, they want their privacy respected. One shows up every year in a baseball hat and sunglasses, and that's how she wishes to attend the event. And you know, she herself is a very strong wildlife conservationist, but you know, she doesn't want the spotlight or the limelight on her. You know, I respect her privacy.
My wife and I finally got to one of your events, right? Everyone knows how my schedule is, who listens. It was for my birthday, right? 51st birthday. She said, oh, let's go. No, and I said, I tell you what, hon, you know what I like? You go and pick out the day. She picked out the day that was 100% appropriate to me. That was when there were two films on Yellowstone. Another film was on the grasslands up in Canada, in Western Canada. And there was another film on Texas. And I thought, no, as you know, I'm very familiar with Yellowstone. I've been there, no, for the listeners here. I've been there. I did a project out in Mission Line, Montana, outside of Yellowstone, about an hour and 10 minutes outside of Yellowstone for one fall, right? From the end of the summer to the early winter. I've been to Yellowstone a number of times. I'm very familiar with it. It felt really good going and seeing all these places that I've already been. You know, I just about fell out of the chair, you know.
It's very settling when you watch a film and you say, you know, I was there. I was in that very spot. And you know, that's happened to me over the years. I think the series that you're mentioning was a themed series that we titled The American Old West. And two films in particular, one about Yellowstone was about grizzly bears, which was narrated by the Academy Award winner Jeff Bridges. And then we had multiple films this year narrated by Peter Coyote. Who has done a remarkable job narrating fantastic wildlife and natural history documentaries over his illustrious career, and both of whom I have not had the pleasure of meeting, but I hope one day, Peter in particular, we can give an award to, because I think over the last 12 years, there's probably over a dozen and a half films that he has narrated that we've screened on wildlife. It seems to be his passion, and he just has that voice. He has that incredible voice that you know, you narrow down your list to your short list of who you want as a narrator for your film. And he always seems to come up as a producer saying, "Want Peter Coyote as a narrator of the film." And we've had a number of celebrities over the years narrate films that we've screened. We've even had celebrities star in some of the films.
Right.
A few years ago, we had William Shatner, Captain Kirk, in a film about whale sharks.
Right.
And that was a film that I always mentioned because that film in particular changed policy when it was shown to the royal family of Thailand. And at the time, I was not even aware that Thailand had a royal family. They watched the film of killing of whale sharks off their waters. And as a result, that film helped change policy and led to the protection of whale sharks no longer being hunted and killed off Thailand's waters. Now, of course, we know that there's still illegal poaching and illegal commercial fishing, and that is something that will take many more years to stop and control. But now there at least is protection of the books, and that protection is enforced. And that's one of the things we take pride with Wildlife Conservation Film Festival. We've had a number of films over the years, whether it be about ivory, in which when we took the film festival to right. China in 2017, and later on President Xi put into law the ban of import and export of ivory into China.
And that's a huge market there.
And that is a market there. And we no longer see 30,000 elephants killed a year in Africa. That number has been cut in half, still too many. But because of the wisdom of President Xi and his insight, you know, it was a great step in the right direction. Hopefully we'll see more and more positive things. I just saw a report where for the first time in a very long time, in Kenya in particular, their elephant population has increased. And much of this is because of the protection plans that they have in place by Kenya Wildlife Services and because of the poaching restrictions they have and the fact that China has adopted this no import-export policy of ivory. You know, these are things that, you know, Wildlife Conservation Film Festival, we have a role that we play in this. I mean, certainly there are other organizations and government organizations that are involved, but again, it's no single individual or single group or organization that that can do this by themselves.
Well, I'll say this much. We grew up, you know, in the 80s with all these TV series. You had Knight Rider, you had all these other ones. And what the overall message of a lot of them was one man can make a difference. In this case, right, one person, one group, small group of people here came up with an idea, and now they're impacting policy with this. There is a vision, and that's part of being a leader, is you have to develop a vision, communicate the vision, and see it through. And you've done, and I want to congratulate you on that, because you've done that with this. There's a lot of people, I'm sure when you started, there was a lot of doubt. Well, is this going to work? Is this not going to work? How am I going to do this? How am I going to pay the bills?
Yeah.
Right?
We still face adversity today. I mean, when we started, it was very difficult to get films submitted from filmmakers. You know, being a new organization, a new company,
right,
people were apprehensive and say, you know, what is WCFF? I've never heard of them. And one of the things I take pride in is we are not a nonprofit, and I don't want to be a nonprofit.
Right.
And that's a discussion for another time. And for those, you know, who will have that question as to why. In summary, I'll just say I know of too many organizations, particularly in conservation and wildlife, that are nonprofits, that are legally 501c3s. And quite frankly, I don't know where the money goes. It's certainly not going to conservation. I'm not going to name these organizations. They know who they are. I certainly know who they are because I have followed them over the years and I've been involved with them over the years.
Right.
But the one thing about WCFF that we're very proud of is our transparency. Every dollar that comes into this organization goes into the operational expenses and into our budget. And if someone says, well, where is this money going? I don't have to think about, you know, what answer to give them. I can give it to them automatically. I don't have to say, well, let me give you, you know, give us several weeks for us to generate a report. Again, you know, fully transparent. Again, the money goes into exactly what we're saying that it's being spent for. And that is the operational expenses, which you as a business owner know
right.
that those expenses are long and they vary from, in our case, rental of theater to advertising, promotion, marketing, the list goes on. But even today, you know, we're always facing adversity, say from the big boy networks, because you know, they want these films first, or they want complete control over these films and for no one else to show them. And unfortunately, you know, the ugly side of this industry, the film industry, that it is a business, and it at times can be a cutthroat and ruthless business. But you know, we're very fortunate that we've developed a reputation of excellence globally over the years. You know, now we have filmmakers coming to us that they contact us and say we want to show our film, whether it be a world or North American premiere at WCFF. And you know, that is something that I'm very proud of. Because in the beginning, it was very difficult. I cannot say in the beginning, I didn't question whether we were going to succeed or fail, because you know me, Jim, as you said, for 30 years, I have always adopted a policy that failure is not an option.
Right.
And that when I take on a case or a subject or a job, or in this case, WCFF for me is not a career, it's not a job. I'm not sure how I define it. a life calling, so to speak. It's more of an all of that. But for me, it was never a question of will this succeed. It was a question that I will do whatever I have to make sure that this organization not only exists, but thrives. You know, there's an analogy that I use from the late Jacques Cousteau. People protect what they love. And as I love WCFF, I have protected it over the years. But these films also do the same thing. As I had mentioned, not everyone will be able to see an elephant in the wild, whether it's in Africa or Asia. Not everyone will be able to see a koala or a wombat or a whale swimming in the ocean. So if they can't see it, how do they love it? And they do so through the power of film. And through film and media, they'll then be inspired and engaged to protect. And we've had people come from Midwestern United States, from Kansas, but have never seen the ocean, but yet they love the ocean. They love the coral reefs. They love the marine life that is swimming in the ocean, whether it's a shark or a whale or a seahorse. And they may in their lifetime never have that opportunity to go physically see it, whether it's because of economics or a variety of reasons. But that doesn't mean they can't fight to protect it. And they do so because of what they see in film or in a media exhibit of photography. And that's something that we're very proud of, that over the years we have influenced thousands, tens of thousands of people globally. We have developed partnerships to take our film festival to China, to Brazil, to Mexico, to Nigeria in Africa, to multiple European countries. We're not a film festival that is specifically based in New York any longer. We are a global organization. And true, we have not done our global events in the last almost 24 months, but we're hoping that by 2022, we'll be able to resume our global partnership program. And in fact, we're looking at expanding to a number of other countries across the globe into 2022 and then in 2023 and beyond. So it's an exciting time for WCFF. And, I'm optimistic about what the future holds for us.
That sounds great, Chris. You're an inspiration. I think that's a pretty good place to end it. So how do they find you?
Well, again, if you are active on social media, on Instagram and Twitter, we are WCFF_.org. If you use Facebook and LinkedIn, just type in Wildlife Conservation Film Festival, where we have a group page on LinkedIn and a group page on Facebook. And then our website, again, is WCFF.org. There you can contact us via email, and I'll make it even easier. Just info@WCFF.org is our email address. And we are fairly active. We've been a little quiet the last few weeks just because we needed a break between the physical event in New York the virtual event coming up. So we went into a little mini hibernation, but starting next week, we'll be very active on social media before we launch the virtual event on the 25th. Please, if you have any questions, just contact us directly. We're always happy to hear from our supporters.
All right. Thank you very much, Chris. And that's Chris Gervais from Wildlife Conservation Film Festival. Thank you for coming on to our podcast and telling us what's going on with you. And we're looking forward to future updates.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate your support, allowing us to participate tonight, and look forward to speaking with you again in the future.
Great. Thanks a lot, Chris.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
That's unfortunate. We won't get to talk with him again. But let's not forget about his important work that he had in protecting wildlife. And basically it was, it's kind of hard to put into words what I'm feeling here about Chris. I want to remember him as a person who had a purpose. His purpose was wildlife, protecting endangered species, protecting ecosystems, bring that to everybody. And it's still a very important thing. I think we learned during the last couple of years, you have to be going out there and experiencing things. And this whole thing was, you'd see people go to these films, experience these films, and then say, you know what, we're going to go out and we're going to look at this stuff. It's important to see this stuff. Well, I'm never going to be able to go to Antarctica in all likelihood. But to see something on film like that inspires me to go out and experience it myself. I've always wanted to do crazy things on video, deal with wildlife, right? Documentaries and things of that nature. Not where my skill set lies, at least not yet. But I'm glad that we have people out there still doing that, continuing on this work with him. If you go over to Zurb TV, they still have the list of all the films that were there. They are available on other platforms. I'll try to in the future, post, some other stuff. He was very active on Vimeo. Let's see. Bear with me. All right. Apparently a lot of this stuff was taken down here. So he was, here it is. WCFF. On Vimeo, vimeo.com, you go into WCFF, and hold on. Here it is. All different types of links to videos. Let me share this, do a share screen. So this was his last video update, advertisement for Kings of the North searching for the last ice bears. I mean, these are all professionally done films here that he had, was advertising. But anyway, here we have, thanks for bearing with me. So we're going to take a brief break here and do some commercials. And we're just going to go and share a couple of news stories here. And we'll be back tomorrow night, February 15th, and we'll go from there. Old, stale, and hackneyed. Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that actually addresses your hazards in your workplaces and is not standardized baloney from 25 years ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call Jim Pozel at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you're receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces. All right, some OSHA news here. I don't believe we covered a lot of this stuff. So this is, again, everyone is innocent until proven guilty. A lot of these citations are proposed citations, and they may be vacated or anything. No, any number of things may do there. Vacate them, reduce them, increase them. Today I heard that they increased one. Well, I had a customer call up I went there and argued, and they said they were going to come in again. Blah, 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 blah. Well, maybe you shouldn't yell at OSHA. Not usually a very successful strategy to yell at people. New Jersey contractors' ongoing disregard for safety laws leads to $1 million penalty after federal inspection finds workers exposed to falls. This did not hit the major news network, so I did not want to really go out there and share this. names, but this is out of Paterson, New Jersey. A company was put under a local emphasis program for falls and construction. The agency issued 6 willful violations in July 2023, stemming from July 2023. The company faces a proposed penalties of $1,017,000 for these things. The OSHA has inspected this company for 5 times, and in each instance, the agency cited the company for failure to provide workers with fall protection. The company has been added to the severe violators program. So do we have a, yeah, here it is, from the 24th. And here is the citation list. So we're just going to go down and here we are. All right. Citation one, item one, Sirius 1926-100, no hard hats. Right? Again, Henan, no hard hats. Citation one, item two. Working levels on scaffolds are not fully planked, 16,131. Citation one, item three, more scaffolding issues. And this was scaffolding access, it looks like. The employee climbed the scaffold frame to the lower roof. That was observed last July, another 16,131. Citation one, item four. Some more scaffolding issues. Again, no top rail, no personal fall arrest systems, no guardrail system on the scaffold, the working level. 16,131. Citation two, item one, a willful. And this was the full amount, 152,100. That was the full amount at the time of the violation. And this was no safety glasses. Really? No safety glasses. Gotta love it. Here we have citation two, item two. This is the full amount. Again, why one is at 152? That's not the full amount. Ay, ay, ay. Here we have 161,323, citation two, item two. Each employee engaged in residential construction, no fall protection. Willful. Citation two, item three, willful, $161,000, no fall protection. Citation two, item four, willful, no fall protection. Citation two, item five, willful, no fall protection. Citation two, item six, another willful, no fall protection. For a grand total of $1,017,248. I mean, I don't get it. U.S. Department of Labor cites Alabama construction employer for after heat illness claims. I think we covered this on our last program. This is from February 5th, 16,131. It was a general duty clause violation. Again, this is a, you're going to be seeing more of these. OSHA is, no, they've had one of these proposed standards in the books, on the books, in the proposal stage. Now, let's do a stop share here. There was one thing I wanted to cover. It was on the Alec Baldwin situation with the arborer. All right. Here is from the AP. There was a rather extensive article from another website here. I'm not going to share with anybody here that. Now, I will be covering this trial from the over the next few weeks because the. Now, I was always wondering, you know, what why is this arbor being, you know, who is, what is her name? Gutierrez Reed, right, is her name. Hannah Gutierrez Reed unwittingly brought live rounds onto the set when she first began to work on the film. She's involuntary homicide. But now the tragedy occurred, and this is from Special Prosecutor Carrie Morrissey, right? The tragedy occurred due to a series of negligent acts, given that the live rounds were on set well before October 21st, 2021. I was wondering what the basis of this whole thing is, because she was told not to do her job, and they cut her budget, you know, budgeting issues and everything else, and there was lack of supervision of her with this. So again, you know, Alec Baldwin, okay, he allegedly held the gun with her. It was, well, she's, you know, was in charge, but she wasn't in charge in this thing. Now, this is what it comes down to. And again, if you are involved with a fatality on site, all right, and if you are a person in charge, foreman or above, again, you have a right to remain silent, and you have a right to an attorney. You do have Miranda rights. You have to assert them. Had these folks kept their mouths shut, they probably would not be dealing with criminal, my opinion, criminal things. They might be, but you're not as certain. They talk. They think they're going to talk their way out of a fatality. You're not going to talk your way out of a fatality. Real simple. Right? So this is... All right. So basically... there were mitigating circumstances, allegedly, that go beyond the actual act. So, for example, they were, there was live ammunition on the thing. According to prosecutors, the armor was responsible for storage, maintenance, and handling of firearms and ammunition. Right? And it goes... what else? There was allegedly some type of drug stuff, allegedly obstruction of justice, tampering with evidence, sort of thing, which are felony charges, and a whole bunch of stuff on emails and on text messages, allegedly, videos of her bringing a gun into this particular gun, allegedly into a Santa Fe bar. Again, this little thing called a smartphone. People say, well, Jim, why is it that color? Why do you have that color? Because, oh, I could see it. All right. It's your own worst enemy. If you're doing illegal stuff, don't put it on the phone. I'm sorry. This is not telling people how to get around the law. All right. But these smartphones, again, I had a labor law attorney who had a question at a conference, and he said, Well, do we videotape stuff? Now on site, and he says, well, sometimes it works out for you, sometimes it doesn't. All right, we had I had a client call me up for a consultation. All right, so if you want to consult with me, you want to talk with me for an hour, we could do that for an hour. You don't have to hire me for the whole thing, but for an hour. So, for example, this week, I have a client on this week who is coming in from overseas who wants to know what this thing called OSHA is. So I'm consulting with that person for a week, for an hour. We do that sort of thing. But this other guy, he calls me up, blah, blah, blah. We do a little investigating. Turns out that people on site got out their smartphone. They wanted to do a TikTok video. Before you know it, they had a catastrophic situation occur. Why? Because they think that they were filming a TikTok video because, pardon me, they were micro influencers of some sort. Guess what? Same thing looks like happened here with this. And we'll see how this trial is. We're going to be going in and figuring things out. So that's all I have for tonight on Safety Wars. Thanks for bearing with me. We're a little bit discombobulated here with some technical issues with things. But I want to thank everybody for bearing with me here. And we'll go. We're getting better. We're getting back in the swing of things here. So we will be seeing everybody tomorrow here on Safety Wars, and we'll go from there.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.